It's good to see everybody again. Thank you for indulging me while I went and visited family. The topic that I wanted to examine today is the strange story of the Egla Arufa, the heifer whose neck is broken in a ceremony. The Torah describes what is done. If in the land that the Lord your God is assigning you to possess, someone slain is found lying in the open, the identity of the slayer not being known, your elders and magistrates shall go out and measure the distances from the corpse to the nearby towns. The elders of the town nearest to the corpse shall then take a heifer, which has never been worked, which is never pulled in a yoke, and the elders of that town shall bring the heifer down to an ever-flowing wadi, which is not tilled or sown.
Remember?
There in the wadi, they shall break the heifer's neck. The priests, the sons of Levi, shall come forward, for the Lord your God has chosen them to minister to him and to pronounce blessing in the name of the Lord, and every lawsuit in case of assault is subject to their ruling. Then all the elders of the town nearest to the corpse shall wash their hands over the heifer whose neck was broken in the wadi, and they shall make this declaration, Yadeinu lo shafchu et adam hazeh ve'einenu lo ra'u. Our hands did not shed this blood, nor did our eyes see it done. Absolve, O Lord, your people Israel, whom you redeemed, and do not let guilt for the blood of the innocent remain among your people Israel, and they shall be absolved of blood guilt. Thus you will remove from your midst guilt for the blood of the innocent, for you will be doing what is right in the sight of the Lord. It's a very strange ceremony, and it's not clear what it is that it was intended to accomplish. And we will see various theories about what the purpose of the ceremony was. I purposely read it in English because the text is, just wanted to make sure that everybody really understands all the details of what is being suggested here. But we will also look some more at the Hebrew as we go through. So I guess on one level, the simplest explanation is to say that, as it said in last week's Parsha, it's last week's Torah portion we read, "V'lo tachanifu et ha'aretz asher." I'm sorry. Well, you shall not pollute the land in which you live, for blood pollutes the land, and the land can have no expiation for blood that is shed on it, except by the blood of him who shed it. You shall not defile the land in which you live, in which I myself abide. So there is this concept that we saw in last week's Torah portion, that there's something that happens to the land, and that ignoring homicide that takes place in your country is something horrible, and something has to be done when a homicide has taken place. And the normal thing that is done is that you apprehend the murderer and you punish the murderer, and by doing that, you remove the stain that is on the land. And why is there a stain on the land? Again, last week's Parsha explains, "Lo tetameh et ha'aretz asher atem yoshvim ba, asher ani shochem betocha." Because God is there in the land, because there's this strong connection between God and the land. And so that is why it is important to have a justice system that is taking care of the cases of homicide that take place in the country. But what happens when lo noda mihikahu, as the text here says in the Torah? So what do you do when you can't figure out what to do in this case of homicide? And it's possible that you could say that the law is also connected to the verse in Bereishit that says, "Shofech dam ha'adam Va'adam damo yishafech ki betzelem Elohim asa et ha'adam. Again, there is this concept that homicide is so awful because human beings are made in the image of God. So we have the point that God is connected to the land, and God is also connected to human beings. And so I'm guessing that that's the simplest explanation of what is happening here. That there's a ceremony to try to deal with the fact that there's a stain, a taint on the land, and the Torah kind of describes it as an insult against God, an insult against the land, and it's possible that it's all connected to the concept of Tzelem Elohim, of human beings being in the image of God, and so that's why we have to do this ceremony. And I'd say that might be, on the pshat level, perhaps the simplest way of understanding the purpose behind this ceremony. That doesn't explain how the ceremony works, but it does explain what the purpose of the ceremony is. We'll see more theories about the purpose of the ceremony as we go through our sources. Ibn Ezra, in his commentary, says, V'yitachin shahashem tziva la'asot kein ha'ir ha'kerova. So the problem that Ibn Ezra is dealing with, okay, if there's a stain on the land, then why particularly should you be measuring to find the closest city? Why don't we say that it's kind of a national problem in Canada, if somebody commits homicide and is being put on trial, I'm not a lawyer, but I think that the trial is being described as Elizabeth against so and so, the person who has been. It's the state, and in the United States, it's the United States versus or the state of whatever state it is against the person who's being put on trial. So there's a larger communal responsibility. So why is there a connection to the specific city? So Ibn Ezra says, Lulei sha'asu avera kadomela lo nizdamen lahem sheyehareg adam karov mehem. Had they not committed some kind of similar infraction, then it would not have happened that anybody would have been killed in the vicinity of their town. It seems to me as if Ibn Ezra is kind of alluding to an explanation that's given in the Gemara that says that what happens when somebody commits homicide intentionally and isn't caught, and somebody else commits homicide accidentally and isn't caught, the Gemara says that God causes them to come to the same place, and the one who committed murder accidentally is climbing up on a ladder, and he falls off the ladder, and he falls on the person who committed murder intentionally, and then we have the person who committed intentional homicide ends up getting killed, and the person who had gotten away with killing somebody without having been accused of this. Now there's testimony against this person, and so the person who should be dead is dead, and the person who should be going to the Ir Miklat, to the city of refuge. So in other words, that God will make it all work out that way. So Ibn Ezra is suggesting that maybe God caused this to happen near this particular city because there was some problem there in the city, and that's why the text suggests that it's specifically the people in the closest city who should be put through this ceremony. And then Ibn Ezra says, I like his language here, it's an unusual kind of language, Umachshevot Hashem amku v'gavhu le'ein keitz etzleinu. For us, God's thoughts are infinitely deep and lofty. You know, you might argue that amok and gavoa are actually the opposite of each other. So which one is it? Are they extremely deep or are they extremely lofty? But either way, either being deep or being lofty, there's something that human beings can't understand. So we say, you know, I guess in the bottom line, he's saying, I don't know why we have this ceremony here. I don't know how this ceremony works, but it must be that something wrong took place in the town that was nearby. Okay, so we have the suggestion that there's a stain on the land. We have the suggestion that there's a stain on the community. And one could argue that the Mishnah tries to expand on this idea of the stain on the community. So here's what it says in the Mishnah. Zikne ota ha'ir rochatzim yedehem b'mayim b'makom arifata shel egla. The elders of that city wash their hands in water in the place of the breaking of the neck of the heifer. V'omrim, and they recite this formula. Yadeinu lo shafchu et adam hazeh ve'einenu lo ra'u. Our hands did not spill this blood, nor did our eyes see. And then, famous line in the Mishnah, which gets quoted widely, as we shall see in the continuation here. The Mishnah explains, "V'chi ala alibenu shebeit din shofchei damim hin?" Did it enter our minds that the elders of the court are spillers of blood? Rather, they declare, "Ela." Okay, so you've got the Hebrew here, and I'm telling you right away that I purposely translated the Hebrew here into what looks like clumsy English, because we will see that it is not all that clear how to understand these last seven Hebrew words of the Mishnah. Shelo ba liyadeinu ufetarnuhu lo ri'inuhu behenachnuhu. Okay, so I translated here. He did not come to us and then we sent him away. We did not see him and then forsake him, or leave him be, as you prefer, for translating that verb, lehaniach, to leave him alone in the sense of forsaking him, or leaving him alone in another possible sense. Okay, so this is the Mishnah's understanding, that the elders are not making a statement that they weren't responsible for the killing, but they're making a different statement about their responsibility. In the Yerushalmi, in the Jerusalem Talmud, there are two explanations given for that line in the Mishnah. Again, that line in the Mishnah, Shelo ba liyadeinu fetarnuhu lo ri'inuhu behenachnuhu. So the Yerushalmi says, Rabbanim dehacha patrin keraya behoreg, verabbanim detaman patrin keraya beneherag. The rabbis over here, meaning here in Israel, this is the Talmud Yerushalmi, the Jerusalem Talmud, the rabbis here in Israel explain the karya. Karya would normally mean the verse or perhaps the verses. I think that here it might mean the declaration, and it's this declaration here. Shabot lo ba liyadeinu ufetarnuhu. He did not come to us, and then we sent him away. We did not see him, and then forsake him or leave him be. So who is this referring to? The rabbis here in Israel explain that this declaration is referring to the murderer, the horeg. The rabbis there in Babylonia explain it as referring to the victim. Who are they talking about? Lo ba liyadeinu ufetarnuhu. And then the Yerushalmi explains further. Rabbanin dechacha patrin keraya behoreg. The rabbis here explain that this declaration is referring to the murderer. Shelo ba al yadeinu ufetarnuhu velo haragnuhu velo reinuhu vehenachnuhu v'imnamnu al dino. It is not the case that he came to us and then we sent him away without putting him on trial, finding him guilty, and executing him, nor that we saw him and then let him be by muddling his trial. We didn't mess up the trial. It isn't that we caught the murderer, but that's the declaration that they're making when they say, Lor inuhu. They're publicly declaring that they did what they could. It's not because they haven't searched for the murderer. They've searched for the murderer and they haven't found the murderer. And that's what they're saying. It's not that they're saying we haven't spilled this blood. What they are saying is we haven't let the spilling of this blood go unpunished. And that's what Loba, he did not come to us. And then we sent him away. That's a reference to the murderer. But the rabbis there in Babylonia, it's very nice that the rabbis in Eretz Yisrael know about that there, the fact that there are two different interpretations of that line in the Mishnah. So we think here in Eretz Yisrael, this means that it isn't that we did a lousy job of finding or prosecuting the murderer, but the rabbis there in Babylonia, they think that this line means Rabbanim de Taman Patrin Kraya Beneherad. They think that it's a reference to the murder victim. Loba al yadenu ufetarnuhu belo halbaya belo reinuhu behenachnuhu belo parnasa. It is not the case that he came to us and then we sent him away without accompaniment, nor that we saw him and left him without parnasa, support, meaning presumably food. That they're saying we don't have any guilt on us for not taking care of this person who was here. So we have two really different understandings of how the Mishnah is understanding what's happening here. One understanding is that the elders of the city have to be able to make the declaration, we've done everything possible to put the murderer on trial and we've just failed because you can't always find a murderer and successfully put him on trial. And the second explanation is this person died, but we don't have any responsibility on us for his death. It's not as if he came here. So it's as if the Rabbanim de Taman, those rabbis there in Babylonia, seem to be explaining here that the person who got killed was a needy person who came here to town. And when he came here to town, we didn't say, sorry, we don't have anything to do for you. There's nothing that we can do on your... And we didn't send him off into the dangerous zones outside of the town. And remember that this person who was killed here was killed outside of the town. It wasn't killed in a town. So you're measuring to... So presumably, the area between cities is more dangerous than the area inside of cities because there's no clear police force that would be policing the area here. So the people in the town have to say, this person was not out wandering between cities because we failed to take care of the person. And so that's what the Yerushalmi says about the difference between their understanding, the understanding in Eretz Yisrael of this rule and the understanding in Babylonia. But now we see in the Bavli itself, in the Babylonian Talmud, that is the case. That's how the Babylonian rabbis explain what the problem is. V'amar Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, ein egla arufa ba'a ela bishvil tzarei ha'ayin. Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi says the egla arufa is brought only because of stingy people. what does the meaning of that? Shene'amar va'anu va'amru yadeinu lo shafu et adam haseh v'chi alibeinu al tash zikne beitin shofei damim ela lo bali yadeinu v'tarnuhu v'lo re'inuhu v'heinachnuhu. Did we actually think that the elders have to make a declaration that they weren't the murderers? No, of course not. Never entered our minds that way, that the elders are declaring this statement, this declaration that we found in the Mishnah, lo bali yadeinu v'tarnuhu v'lo re'inuhu v'heinachnuhu. It was not the case that he came to us and then we sent him away without food, nor that we saw him and we let him leave the city without accompaniment. That's not what you do when a poor person comes to town. You give them accompaniment. You try to take care of them. And so we see that what the Yerushalmi reports is correct. So this is the understanding. Now, what I think is really interesting about this Babylonian understanding, I don't know why it's specifically the Babylonian understanding, but what I think is very interesting about it is it seems to have taken a text that is talking about murder. Lo noda mi hikahu. We don't know who it was who killed the person, that there's a murder that has taken place. And it looks as if it's turning it into a text about communal responsibility to take care of poor people. And when somebody comes to town, somebody is wandering through town and comes to the Jewish community, and then we have to be able to make the declaration if he leaves town, and then he's killed after, and he dies after he leaves town, we have to say, it's not our fault. We can declare that it's not the case that he asked us for food and we didn't give him food. It's not the case that he came here and we showed him where the highway is, the 401 is over there. That's how you get out of town, and we didn't accompany him on the way out of town. So it's turning it into a cautionary tale, into a lesson about the responsibility of the community to take care of people who require assistance. But then, you know, what are we going to do with the fact that the text seems to be talking about murder? So Rashi sees this gap that exists between what the Torah is talking about, which seems to be a case of unsolved homicide. There's the problem. There's a homicide that took place here, and we don't know who committed the homicide. And this previous understanding here is that, you know, it's about stingy people. The problem is there could be a Jewish community that doesn't want to be helping needy people, and we have to be able to make the declaration, it is not the case that we neglected this needy person. It's not the case that we were stingy. We did whatever is necessary to do in order to take care of a needy person. So Rashi tries to make a compromise between these two positions. Rashi says, "Ufatarnuhu below mesonot." We let him go without giving him food. Klomar. So Rashi reconstructs a whole story here about how this guy died. Klomar, limzonot hutzrach. In other words, this person needed food. V'loyalo, they didn't have any food, and we didn't give him any food, and that's why. So he's in trouble. V'ra'a echad nosem mizonot, uva lechotfam mimeno. So what do you do when you don't have any food and you're worried that you're going to die of starvation? He says, okay, the guy, uva lechotfam mimeno la'ones re'avon, because of the compulsion of his hunger. It's an interesting term here that Rashi uses the word ones, which might be suggesting that there's no culpability, or at least that there is very reduced culpability for somebody who steals food because he's starving. There's it's a case of ones, and you know the standard rabbinic phrase is ones rachmana patre, that God forgives somebody who behaves out of ones. And so this person has this compulsion to, as we all have a compulsion to eat. And so what happens? He tries to steal from a person who he sees who does have food. The amad ze'alav haragol, and then the owner of the food, who felt, here's this thief coming here and trying to steal my food from me. People we know protect their own property, and that's how he ended up getting killed. So here's how Rashi attempts to make a compromise between what I would call the pshat reading of the text, that we're dealing with a case of an unsolved homicide, and the previous attempt of Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi to say we're dealing with a case of Jewish communities owning up to the responsibility that they have towards needy people to provide them with the food and with the other sustenance that they require. And so by constructing this whole story, Rashi manages to get the text to be both about stinginess and about murder. Rashi makes a further point about what's happening here. It looks like a technical point, but I'm going to argue that it's more than a technical point. So that was Rashi, actually, just to point out, that was Rashi in his commentary on the Gemara. But now we look at Rashi in his commentary on the Torah. Yadeinu lo shafchu v'chi alta alev shezikne beidin shokei damim heim elo lo reinu v'tarnuhu b'lo v'sonot v'lo l'viya. Our hands did not spill it. It entered our minds that the elders of the court are spillers of blood. Rather, it was not the case that he came to us and then we sent him away without food, nor that we saw him and left him without accompaniment. The ha-kohanim omrim kaper la'amcha Yisrael. And then the priests say, Kaper la'amcha Yisrael. Notice, in the first paragraph, Rashi is talking about Ziknei Beit Din. And in the second paragraph, he's talking about HaKohanim, the priests. And then he says, V'nikaper lahem adam, HaKatuv mevasram shemisha asu kein yechupar lahem ha'avon. And so now, Rashi is trying to solve an interesting textual problem that's going on here. We go back to the biblical text. In the land the Lord your God has given to you, somebody's slain, we don't know who killed him. Then it says, in blue, your elders and your magistrates should go out. And then again it says in blue, the elders of the town nearest to the corpse shall then take a heifer, and then suddenly, so that was in the first four verses here. We're talking about the Zakenim, and then we get to verse 5, and then we have a new group of actors there. Okay, so we had the elders there, the Ziknei Ha'ir Ha'ir, and the Shoftim also. And now we have the Kohanim, the priests, the sons of Levi, shall come forward. What do they do? It doesn't say what they do in verse 5. They'll just come there because Alpihem Yekol Riv Chol Naga. Every lawsuit and every case of assault is subject to their ruling. And then we go back to Ziknei Ha'ir Ha'ir. V'chol Ziknei Ha'ir Ha'ir Akrovim El Chalal Irchatzu Et Yedehem Al Ha'edla Ha'arufa Banachal. And then we go back to the elders, and the elders wash their hands. V'anu V'amru, and they shall make this declaration. So who is making this declaration? Yadeinu lo shafchu et adam hazeh ve'einenu lo ra'u. And who is speaking in verse 8? Kaper la'amcha Yisrael asher padita Hashem v'al titen dam naki bekerav amcha Yisrael. Is it the same people speaking in verse 7 and verse 8? Or two different groups? And then Rashi's final comment here is on the words, the Nikaper Lahem Hadam, that's the narrator speaking. Hakatuv Mevasran, as Rashi said in the last paragraph here, Hakatuv Mevasran Shemesha Asuken Yehupar Lahem Ha'avon. Of course, there are no quotation marks in the Hebrew. If you look on the English side, we have quotation marks around, our hands did not shed this blood, nor did our eyes see it. Absolve, O Lord, your people Israel, and do not let the guilt remain upon your people Israel. End of quotation. But that's an interpretation, and it's Rashi's interpretation. And I think it's a very reasonable interpretation to say that those last three words are, as Rashi put it, a katuv mevasram. Here's the narrator coming in and saying, yes, this will work. And Rashi just says here in the first paragraph that it's the Ziknei Beit Din speaking. Did it cross our mind that it's Ziknei Beit Din? And they say, no, the Ziknei Beit Din are saying, Lo ri'inuhu f'tarnuhu. And then HaKohanim Omrim, Kaper La'amcha Yisrael, and the priests say, so we have Rashi, I think, coming up with an ingenious solution to the problem of why there are two groups here, because there are two things going on in this ceremony. There is a statement here, we do not take responsibility for this homicide. We bear no responsibility, direct or indirect, for this homicide. It isn't as if we neglected the person who got killed, and so that you need the kind of, if you'll pardon the expression, the secular authorities in town to make that declaration. And then verse 8 says, "Kaper la'amcha Yisrael asher padita Hashem." So who's in charge of kapara? Who's in charge of absolving from guilt? The priests are generally doing that. And so, according to Rashi's understanding, which I think is a fine understanding of this text here, there are like two ceremonies going on at the same time. There is a ceremony where the civic authorities, one might say, are saying, we don't bear any responsibility for what happened here. And then the ritual that is going on, the priests are saying, are turning to God and asking God that because of this ritual. Looking through the history of interpretation, there are, of course, the difficulty with what Rashi is saying is that you've got what looks like one speech here. Yadeinu lo shavchu et adam hazeh ve'einenu lo ra'u kaper la'amcha Yisrael asher padita Hashem. That, it would seem strange for the Torah to be switching speakers in the middle of a speech without telling us that the speaker has switched. But either, however you do it, there's going to be a difficulty. So some people say that the simplest way of understanding this, another simple way, I don't know which is the simplest, another simple way of understanding it is that since verse Bob here says, all the elders of the town shall wash their hands over the heifer, and they shall make this declaration, Manu Vamru, that the whole speech is being given by the elders. And then, of course, you've got the question, why are the priests there? And presumably they're there just to supervise that the ceremony is going on the way the ceremony ought to be going on. That's a possible understanding of the pshat that's going on here, that everything is being done by the zakenim, by the elders, and the kohanim are the ones who are just there supervising. Rashi's grandson, as many of you know, my favorite Torah commentator, but I'm not sure that I agree with him here. His commentary here, he just writes the words that are here. The priests, the sons of Levi, shall come forward and they shall make this declaration, our hands did not absolve your people Israel. It's not certain, but just from writing out those words, it seems like Rashbam is suggesting that the entire speech is being done by the Kohanim, which of course leads to the question, what is the Kohanim doing there if the Kohanim are doing all of the speaking? And so you could say that the Zakenim are doing the heavy lifting of the physical things of measuring to the cities and of pouring out the blood there. But the declaration is being made by the Kohanim. So as I said, this can be seen simply as a technical question of how to understand the fact that there are two groups there. But I think that it's also a question of, you know, like, what's this all about? Is this about dealing with the civic responsibility that there's a homicide that took place and the murderer was not found? Or is this about the what I suggested in the first text that we looked at from last week's Torah reading, the Lo Tachanifu et Ha'aretz, is that there's a problem of the like impurity on the land, the stain on the land, and impurity and things like this that's dealt with by Kohanim, or are both things involved here, as Rashi would like to suggest? Okay, so that's, I would say, the way in which people who try to understand this ceremony in the direction of the Talmudic understanding that it's all connected with this declaration, we did not neglect our duties towards this poor person who came here and ended up getting killed. Rambam takes an entirely different approach to this text. And so here's what Rambam writes in the Guide to the Perplexed. And again, I would argue, you know, this whole series of talks is about Pshat and Drash. And, you know, it's hard to say whether what Rambam is doing here is Pshat or not. You could all come to your own conclusions about this. The beneficial character of the law concerning the breaking of the neck of a heifer is evident, for it is the city that is nearest to the slain person that brings the heifer. And in most cases, the murderer comes from that place. One assumes, you know, it wasn't a particularly mobile society in biblical times, and if somebody has been murdered near a town, the odds are that the murderer lives in the closest town. It's not certain, but there's a good chance of it. So the elders of the place call upon God as their witness, according to the interpretation of our sages, that they have always kept the roads in good condition. They've protected them. They've directed everyone that asks this way. If somebody comes and then says, you know, how do you get from here to Petach Tikva or from here to Berry? You know, they send the person on the proper route, that the person has not been killed because they were careless in these general provisions, and they do not know who has slain him. So all of that is the Rambam sees as wrapped up in the Talmudic tradition of how to understand this text. But what actually is the text trying to accomplish? Rambam explains further. As a rule, the investigation, the procession of the elders, the measuring, and the taking of the heifer make people talk about it. And by making the event public, the murderer may be found out. And he who knows of him or has heard of him or has discovered him by any means will now name the person that is the murderer. And as soon as a man or even a woman or a handmaid rises up and names a certain person as having committed the murder, the heifer is not clear killed. And here, again, Rambam is following a law that appears in the Talmud that if there is any amount of testimony about who the murderer is, then there is no ceremony of the aglav arufa, of the heifer whose neck is broken. And so Rambam takes that law and says that the whole purpose of this was just to get people talking. And if people get talking, then it's likely that somebody will come along with information and say, I know how he died. I know what happened. Here is what happened. So that's the purpose of this, is to get people talking about it. Okay, fine. You get people talking about it, but to what end do you get people talking about it? If you don't have witnesses, then you can't put anybody on trial. We all know that in Talmudic law, you know, there's circumstantial evidence, and certainly rumors and things like this are not sufficient. You need eyewitness testimony. So you know, what's going to be accomplished by getting people talking about it? When the murderer is discovered, when we say, ah, now we know it was so-and-so, because people are saying that it's so-and-so, the benefit of the law is apparent. If the Beit Din cannot sentence him to death, well, Rambam understands that maybe the Beit Din won't be able to take care of it. The king, who has the power to sentence to death on circumstantial evidence, may find him guilty. And if the king does not put him to death, the avenger of blood, again, last week's Torah reading, the avenger of blood may scheme and plan his death and ultimately kill him. So there's a benefit. Rambam's saying that there's a benefit involved here, because even if we can't put the person on trial according to the standard procedures of halakha, there are other ways, there are other methods that could cause this murderer to be put to death. It could happen because the secular authorities in the country, the king in the country, is he referring to a Jewish king, or is he referring to a king when Jews are living in the diaspora? I think he's probably referring to both of them. They both are possibilities. And he also says that the avenger of blood serves a purpose in society, because the avenger of blood may kill a murderer without there being strong testimony about the murderer. If you're uncomfortable with this, just wait. We're going to see another opinion. But this is Rambam's idea. We have thus shown the use of the law concerning the breaking of the neck of the heifer in discovering the murderer. So according to Rambam, this whole thing, and think about what it says in the first verse in the Torah that talks about this. It says, "Lo noda mihikahu." We don't know who the murderer was. That's the problem. And so Rambam is saying that the whole purpose of this ceremony here is sheneda mihikahu, and so that we will all know who was the murderer. And then he explains that there are benefits involved in us knowing who was the murderer. Okay, that's the Rambam's approach. The Rambam, of course, back in the 12th century. And now we skip forward to the 19th century, to Shadal. As many of you will know, Shadal is my favorite among the early modern biblical commentators. And Shadal very often disagrees with Rambam. And here is an example where he disagrees with him. Mitzvat egla arufa einena lema'am yitgaleh harotzeach kedat Rambam morech ele gimel. And then he lists a bunch of other people. The purpose of the laws of the Egla Arufa is not so that the murderer will be discovered, as Maimonides and others claimed. And Shadal offers two different reasons why, what the law of the Egla Arufa is trying to accomplish. Number one, ha'achat. L'chazek ha'emuna ha'mefursemet ba'uma shekol Yisrael areivim ze lazeh v'shela'aretz lo yechupar l'adam asher supach ba'ki'im b'dam shofo v'lachein acharei she'en ha'rotzeach yadua lahem v'lo yuchlu la'asot bo din ya'arfu tachtav ha'egla v'yirchatzu azkenim et yedehem l'siman ki'hem v'sholcheihem nekiim v'chapehem lo negoalu b'dam read it in English, to promote the well-known belief of the Jewish people that they are all responsible for each other, and that the land can have no expiation for blood that is shed on it except by the blood of him who shed it. Accordingly, since they don't know who the murderer was and cannot punish him, they should break the neck of a heifer instead. The elders should wash their hands as a sign that they and their constituents are guiltless and that their hands have not been soiled by the blood of the victim. The important goal is, according to Rambam, the goal is that a murderer should not get away with murder. And according to Shaddal, the purpose of the ceremony is that people should remember that when homicide takes place in your society, you should be upset about this. You have to do something about it. And you could say, well, one of the ways of doing something when homicide takes place in the society where you live is to catch the murderer and to put the murderer on trial and to punish the murderer. But what do you do when you can't do that? You know, there is this feeling, you know, that when you read in the newspaper, you know, that a murder took place where you're living and it hasn't been solved, there is this feeling, or there should be, I guess Shaddal is saying, this feeling that there's something wrong in our society, that something like this is happening, and that we are responsible for each other. We can't just say, oh, there's a bad person who committed murder, and so we have to do something. We, meaning the community, have to do something, and we do it through our leaders, through the zakenim. So that's point number one, according to Shaddal, of the ceremony. V'hashenit, kedei shebetoket emunatam b'ponesh ha-magia la'aretz b'shvil hadam asher shupach ba, lo yavo'u l'harog naki she'ye nechshad al ha-retzicha ha-hi v'zulat ra'aya gemura ve'edut berura. And here, Shaddal is saying, I think, the precise opposite of what Rambam is saying. There's a concern. Since we all are concerned about homicide, we all think that homicide is a terrible thing. It's a blight on society. If murder is taking place in our society, then we might be tempted to lower the threshold of what constitutes proof of murder. We find somebody and there's like circumstantial evidence that sort of connects that person. You know, there's reason to think that that person could have been the murderer, but we don't have any certainty about it. So Shaddal says, the purpose of the ceremony, I hope you're all seeing that this is the opposite of what Rambam said. The purpose of the ceremony for Rambam was to get those chashadot out there, because once we get those chashadot out there, we'll get those suspicions out there, the suspicion might fall on the right person, and then there's all sorts of ways where that where we could act on that suspicion, and we could end up either the civil authorities or the blood avenger will end up killing the person. Shaddal, who I would like to argue has a stronger commitment to due process, is arguing here that the whole purpose of having this ceremony is that people won't say to themselves, we're all responsible for this homicide, we have to do something about it. So we tell them, you've done something. You went through the ceremony, okay, so it's true that you can't find who the murderer is, but you have done something. Ki omnam, he concludes here. Afal pi shiodim hayu she'en kol ha'am aridim al maker re'ehu basater. Now, of course, I think Shaddal is alluding here when he says the phrase maker re'ehu basater. That appears in the Tochacha in Deuteronomy in Parshat Ki Tavo, in the list of Arurim. One of the Arurim is Arur Makere Ehu Basater, that curses is invoked on somebody who commits homicide in a place where there aren't any witnesses, and so that teaches us that God does not expect us to, as Rashbam and Ibn Ezra all point out there in the list there of Arurim, those are things that the entire list there of Arurim is things that the courts of law are not going to be able to punish, and so that's why we call down the curse of God on somebody who does something like this. That's only the homicides that never get discovered. But in a case where we know that there has been a homicide, we might think, we might think that the community, once they find a murder victim, that he said the whole purpose was that people should feel responsibility for each other. But we worried that people might take that too far. And so this ceremony, it gets across the idea that we have responsibility, but it also gets across the idea that we have fulfilled our responsibility by going through this ceremony. And it is not, it is not necessary to go trying to find flimsy evidence and use that against the murderer. So in the end, Rambam and Shaddal are both getting back to the simplest reading that the text is talking about the case of the unsolved homicide, and what are you going to do about the unsolved homicide? And Rambam says, let's get people talking about it because that could lead to the murderer getting his comeuppance one way or another. And Shaddal says, no, this is to make sure that this kind of vigilante justice does not take place. Okay, I will stop here and take a look at the chat and see if we have any interesting comments to... Amok is serious. Okay, good. I agree. Lo re'inuhu. Interesting that they don't talk in terms of prevention, only in terms of post-murder rabbinical behavior. It's true that in the Mishnah, you're right, Ellen, for pointing that out, but we see later on that the Rambam does talk in terms of prevention. The Rambam talked about We took care of the roads properly. We did what is the responsible thing to do. How do the elders become the Beit Din? Well, the term Beit Din is not in biblical Hebrew, and so I think that's like Beit Din is how the rabbis understood what the Zakenim are. Without food, Zev says, does that imply that if the body found died of thirst or hunger, that they are still required to do this ceremony? Good questions there. When I remember as a kid learning this stuff, or maybe as more than a kid, and I think correctly, the message of the responsibility of the community to take care of poor people and to provide them with food, that kind of sunk into my mind as the simple understanding of the text. And we saw how Rashi had to stand on his head to connect it to murder and say, well, actually he was hungry and then he had to steal. And because he stole, he got killed. But I think, in my mind, I used to think about this all the time as what happens when the community doesn't take care of poor people. And that's a fine lesson for all of us to learn, that the community has to take care of poor people. But it's hard to read that into the text itself, which reads, lo noda mi hikahu, that it's a case of homicide. iPad says, so the assumption is that the dead person went out of the city to the forest to forage for food or hunt wild animals. Yes, that could very well be the understanding that the rabbis had. Susan says, so no rich person is ever murdered. Yeah, we happen to know that that is not the case, that sometimes rich people do get murdered. And sometimes when rich people get murdered, Torontonians who are listening here will know that sometimes when rich people get murdered, they never do find out who murdered them. Also, I know we throw a lot on animals to carry our sins, but the poor innocent heifer is again killed in a horrible way, which goes against our idea of being kind to animals. I'm with you, Susan. It's, it's shocking. And that's, you know, so Rambam's argument, they did something really shocking. And why did they do something really shocking? Is to get people talking, because getting people talking is the best way of moving forward with this mess. iPad again, the assumption, or maybe a different iPad, the assumption that the dead person makes it all the sadder, if not for money or goods, that he was killed, then for what? Spite, anger, just because it adds insult to the fatal injury. This may be a response, this kind of response to Rashi, who's kind of putting the blame on this dead person for trying to steal in order to stay alive. Ellen says, although Rambam in Sefer Mitzvot says that it's better for 1,000 guilty to go free than to put an innocent person to death because of the verse, V'nakiv et tzadik lo taharon. Very good point, Ellen. But here he thinks that, murder, putting somebody on trial for murder on flimsy evidence is something that Rambam is willing to say. Somebody wrote directly to me, so I won't say his or her name. So Shatal is saying that the community may punish the wrong person in their feeling of community responsibility. Right on. That is what Shatal is saying, that we want to develop the sense of communal responsibility, but we know the dangers of the sense of communal responsibility, that you could end up saying, okay, if we've got responsibility, we better end up killing somebody here for this murder, even if we've got flimsy evidence. Robert Friedman says, according to Shadal, why do the town elders and Kohanim take the lead? I don't think he addresses that that question. The Kohanim are kind of making the declaration, maybe in Shadal's understanding, that okay, you, the community, feel that there's this stain on you. The stain is gone because of the concern that people might become vigilantes. When I go to Safari, select the text, and then go to commentary on that text, Rashi appears only Hebrew. Is there a way to see the English with it? Jennifer asks everyone, and I say, I'm not sure in Safari, but I know that in the Mikraot Gedolot of AllahTorah.org, you can see the Rashi in Hebrew and in English. Maybe someone else knows about Safari.
In Safari, too. You can do Safari English in English. Okay. They don't have everything translated to English, but whatever they have in English, you can do the Aleph Bet or just the Aleph or the,
right. the A or the Aleph, yes.
Right.
Morris Moskovich asked, did the New Testament story of Pontius Pilate washing its hands intentionally borrow from the story and ironically blame the Jewish community? I was thinking along very similar lines. Morris, I can't tell you whether we're right, but I think that maybe we are right about this. Is the heifer a substitute for the murderer they couldn't find similar to a korban? Ramban, I didn't give you Ramban's commentary here, but he really does understand that there is something Korban-like going on here, but that would have taken us off in a different direction. Regarding Zev's comment, depends on the meaning of halal. Okay. Ellen says she's had the same thought as Morris M, and so did I. Is Rashi putting a little too much faith in the community's intent rather than acknowledging sometimes lesser motives? Maybe. Okay. And I think that takes us to the end. And I will see you all next week. I look forward to seeing you next week, and that we will have the last in our series of of 10 sessions about Pshat and Midrash and the meaning of the biblical text. And everyone should have a good and meaningful fast. And again, I will give a commercial for the wonderful program that was put together by Rabbi Kelman for Tisha B'Av.
Thank you. I'll second that motion. That's 11 a.m. till through 7:15 p.m. straight on Tisha B'Av afternoon Eastern time. So sent out the information. It's on the website. We look forward to learning with you. And they have now an hour break. And Simi Peters, please God, at 1 p.m. will be on Sefer Yirmiyahu. And this evening, of course, Dr. Sokolo continues his weekly series on the Haftarah of the week. And tomorrow morning, we have another triple header, Shuli Mishkan at 11 a.m., her series on a tour of Israel, followed by Rabbi Jonathan Ziering, Ishmita as a lens into understanding the Torah. And tomorrow night's Parsha Shir at 8:30 will be given by Rachel Slutsky from Harvard University. And Friday morning, my Pirkei Avot Shir at 9:30. And then as Dr. Lakshin mentioned, of course, our all-day program on Tisha B'Av. Okay, and then Monday we'll have Rabbanit Shira Mervis at 11 a.m. I think she's doing the Ben Ish Chai this week, rabbis from the Islamic world, followed by Rabbi Alex Israel on his series on Rabbi Lord Jonathan Sacks. So that's the next week's schedule. Dr. Lakshin, it's impressive not only on Tisha B'Av. I think during the week too, if I'm allowed to say such.
Okay.
I mean, what you're talking about, I have to tooth my own horn a little bit.
I agree with you entirely, but
listen, Baruch Hashem,
Tisha B'Av should be on people's minds now. They're probably
100%. There's lots of great Torah out there, and everybody. Kinat Sofrim Tarba Chachma, it's wonderful that there's so much available, and we try to provide, you know, lots of Torah available. So we look forward to learning with you every day. Have a wonderful day, and those who can make it, we'll see you at 1 o'clock for Simi Peters. I actually won't be there. I'm driving my kid to camp. I have to go to the U.S. border and drop him off. We can't cross the border. But anyways, but please God, I'll be back for the class this evening for the Haftorah class. Okay, everybody be well. Thank you. Bye-bye.
All the best. Bye-bye.